Thank you. You may be seated this morning. We find ourselves back in the book of Revelation chapter 3 this morning. And today we look at a church that has a name that we know, Philadelphia. But the church wasn't in Pennsylvania. It was in Asia with six other churches. But that still leaves us with some questions. Does it have the same meaning as our Philadelphia, brotherly love? Was this church good, or did Jesus have any problems with it? And what was it facing, and does it have any meaning for us today? These are all great questions, and we're going to begin to try to answer them this morning. So let's not waste any time and start digging into our text today and look at our next church from Revelation chapter 3, beginning with verse number 7. Write this letter to the angel of the church in Philadelphia. This is the message from the one who is holy and true, the one who has the key of David. What he opens, no one can close, and what he closes, no one can open. Now, before we get into all that, let's see where this church is located. And to do that, we turn once again to our map. You see Philadelphia back there in the back row of these churches. It's there between Sardis and Laodicea, in that back row. So let's take a moment and talk about this church in Philadelphia. So let's mention what it's known as today. The city is known as Alajar, Turkey. But then, the city was situated on a main road that was used by the imperial military. Not that it was only used by the military, but that it was mainly used by the military. They use that road quite frequently to get in and about any area that might be a hot spot, a concern. It was one of their well-traveled places. And the city would routinely see visits from soldiers, travelers, and merchants going through the city to get to one of those other bigger destinations. Because if you haven't guessed by now, the city was small, and it was so small that the city was under the jurisdiction of Sardis. So it was the little brother, if you will, to Sardis, but it did have a pretty big problem. The city was built on what we would call a major fault line and was prone to earthquakes. And prone might not be the best way of putting it. They had some pretty severe earthquakes. As a matter of fact, one destroyed the city almost completely in 17 AD. And because of that, we don't really have too much from the city of things from this time frame to show you. We have a couple, but not much. That earthquake really did a damage to the city and so many aftershocks afterwards. But the first picture I have for you is their theater. It was actually built after the earthquake that destroyed the city. And it was one of the only things that we had left. Now, we also have something that is about 200 years newer than our letter, and that is what I have for you next. This is the remains of a church that was built right after Christianity was ruled by then Emperor Constantine as legal in 313 AD. And this church was built right after that decree. So we have the theater, we have the remains of this church, but then we also found this in one of the ruins. There is this inscription that's found. An inscription found in the ruins suggests that Philadelphia was founded at least as early as the 2nd century BC during the reign of King Amelius II of Pergium, who named the city after his younger brother, Altalius II, who was called Philadelphius in honor of his love and loyalty to his brother the king. So yes, its name was named after brotherly love, and it was to honor that. It was a city of brotherly love. But because of all of the earthquakes and the small size of the city was almost free from temples. You could barely find one because nobody wanted to take the time and energy to invest in building one there that was going to be knocked down from an earthquake. And as a matter of fact, because of that, most people lived outside of the city and farmed grapes. It was kind of dangerous to live in the city. Something might fall on them. So they chose to live outside of the city and stay a little protected from the earthquakes. And it's to this group of believers that Jesus says what he says, that he is the one who is holy and true, the one who has the key of David, and that what he opens, no one can close, and that what he closes, no one can open. And yes, that's a big description. And it's not only big, but it gives us a lot to chew on. So let's start this morning where Jesus started first. a description where he describes himself as holy. Now, the traditional meaning of the word is set apart by God. It was set apart to be different or used for a different purpose. So Jesus was set apart by God and was being used for a different purpose. He came to give his life to reconcile our broken relationship with God, to fix our sin problem. And so we see this word in connection with Jesus. But when we see this word in connection with Jesus, it's typically described as this way, the Holy One of Israel. And again, this is a reference to the Messiah, the one who was going to save God's people as a sacrifice for them. So this was something that was mainly a Jewish ear thing. Jewish ears would hear that he was holy and put the Holy One of Israel. They would understand that it was a reference to being the Messiah. But he says something else that is also interesting. Jesus calls himself true. Now, some people will just put this reference to what it points to and say that Jesus is truth. And while that's true, I want to let you know that this word here actually points us in a different direction. The Greek word that is used here is Althenios, which literally means very God. And yes, if you notice, the word very is in all caps because that was how they would translate it. They would put it very in all caps so that you would show the over and above meaning that this wasn't just God, this was very God. And you would get the idea with it. So he was showing us that he was not just holy, he was the Holy One of Israel. He was the Messiah. And he wasn't just the truth of that being the Holy One of Israel, that he was very God and had all the power that was associated with it. Not a false God. He was the real one. He was the one that made everything. And once again, we begin to understand that. We get a picture of Jesus standing there, the Holy God, the real God, the very God. And Jesus is there standing, holding something. We get a picture of Jesus standing there with a key. And it begs the question, does Jesus have a key ring? And if he does it have a cross on it, right? All right, my mind works in weird ways. It's okay. All joking aside, the key is very important. And Jesus describes it for us as the key of David. Now, before we dig into the meaning of the key, I want you to see that it is a reference to Isaiah chapter 22 and verse 22. In Isaiah 22, verse 22, we read, I will give him the key of the house, to the house of David, the highest position in the royal court. And when he opens doors, no one will be able to close them. And when he closes doors, no one will be able to open them. See, it's almost a direct quote, if you will. And it means something very specific, again, to that Jewish ear. If you heard this, you would know. Remember, this church has no idea really who David is. They have no connection with who David is. So who is David and why does he hold the key? It doesn't mean much to this church. But there is another group of people in the city that if they hear that, it's going to make a connection. It's going to make sense to. Church wasn't a Jewish church, though. But there were Jews in the city, and they needed to hear what Jesus just said. And it's a reference to something specific. It's a reference that the one who will sit on the throne forever, the one that holds the keys, will be over God's people for all eternity. He's the one who's going to rule and reign forever. And if you haven't guessed it yet, this is a reference to a problem that the church is facing and Jesus' authority over those who are opposing them. But we're going to get to that here in just a minute. So let's talk about what this key does. Well, keys always function the same way. They open things and close things. And mainly for us, doors. And since Jesus has the only key, as the holy and real God who reigns forever and ever, what he opens, no one else can close. Yes, this speaks to his power. It speaks to his authority. And what it means for the church and for all who hear. And Jesus' description on something is the decision on something is final, and that nothing can stop it from happening. And by nothing, we also mean that no one can stop it. And if you haven't guessed yet, people were trying to stop this church. They were trying to stop it from being a church. They were trying to stop it from growing in their faith. They were trying to stop its influence in the church. They were trying to stop it from being altogether. But let's look now at what Jesus knows about this church. I mean, because he knows everything, right? Look at chapter 3 and verse number 8. I know all the things you do, and I have opened a door for you that no one can close. You have little strength, that you've opened my word, and you've obeyed my word, and did not deny me. Here, let's talk about what Jesus is telling them. I know all the things that you do. And because Jesus knows their hearts, who they really are inside, their desire to know God, and because of that, Jesus has done something for them. He tells them that I have opened a door for you. And remember, if he opens something, no one can close it. And he's opened a door. Now the Jews in that city were trying to make that door close, and they couldn't because Jesus had opened up that door for them. So this is a reference to something very specific. The open door is salvation. He had opened something for them that no one else could do. He made a way for them to know God, to experience God's love and grace. As the holy God who was the true Messiah, very God, he was the one who came as a sacrifice and made a way for their sins to be forgiven. And it still holds true for us today. He's the open door for us to find our way to God, to find our hearts forgiven, to find a way to change. This is the open door. It was for salvation. It was for them to know the real, true God of the universe. God had opened up a door for them to come and fix their broken hearts and their broken relationships. But I also want you to see that the open door is not a way to escape difficulties, but an opening to share the truth of God's love. God wasn't giving them a way out with this open door, but a way in. This open door was allowing them to come to know Jesus. And as you see, through everything that we've been talking about, this church that wasn't a Jewish church is hearing about King David and hearing about the Messiah and hearing about the Holy One of Israel. They're hearing all of these things, which are definitely not a reference specifically to them, even though it will mean something. It was for all of those who were opposing them. Because you better believe they're going to hear about this message as well. And so this was something for them to use to reach out to those who were making life horrible on them, to share God's love with them. This was for them who heard the message, and again, it was for them to share that message. It was an open door. No one was going to be able to stop them from experiencing God's love. And no one was going to be able to stop them from sharing God's love, even with those who were opposing them. Think about that. This church was being persecuted from the Jews who claimed that they were the right ones, with the right way. But yet Jesus has said, I have an open door. And it didn't mean that they weren't going to face trouble or hardship. But he was giving him all of this so that they could reach out to those people who were persecuting them and say, come through the door with me. But because they were facing the hardship, because they were facing the persecution, again, God knew exactly what was going on with this church and in their hearts. And he tells them, I know that you have little strength. Even though this town was small compared to all the other towns that were receiving letters, this church was still facing a good amount of persecution. They were facing a lot of things. The Jews in that town were making life not just hard, but downright difficult for the church. And we would say that they've been through a lot. And yet, with everything that they faced, Jesus knows and commends them for what they did while they were facing it. Not because of what they faced, but what they did while they faced it. Jesus says, you have obeyed and did not deny me. They stood up to everything and they didn't stop believing. They stood up to everything and they didn't give up. They faced all of that in every way, and yet they refused to let what was happening to them stop them from going through the door and for worshiping. They held on to the love of Jesus and endured everything that came their way. And for that, Jesus commends them. And as a matter of fact, look at what he says next to this church. Look at Revelation chapter 3 and verse 9. "Look, I will force those who belong to Satan's synagogue, those liars who say that they are Jews but are not, to come and bow down at your feet. And they will acknowledge that you are the ones I love, because you have obeyed my command to persevere. I will protect you from the great time of testing that will come upon the whole world to test those who belong to this world." So let's state for the record that this church was facing opposition from the Jewish community in their city. This Jewish contingent must have had some clout with the leadership of the city, and they were able to do this persecution to this church. Now, we don't know exactly what they did or what happened to them, but we do know that they made life miserable for them. And in that, I want you to see that the Jews believed that they were the ones that knew and worshiped God, but they were actually doing the work of Satan. They were actually persecuting this church and refusing to listen to them and the truth of their message. And by doing so, they were helping Satan rough up this church. And for Satan, they were simply useful idiots, people who didn't really know what they were talking about, but talked about it passionately regardless. So we understand today that Satan doesn't like Christians. Satan is bound to spend all eternity in a lake of fire, and he wants as many of God's creation to be with him as possible. He doesn't want someone who's going to get to enjoy the paradise that he got kicked out of. He would rather them be tortured for all of eternity. And he knows that most tend to give up when things get hard. Shake someone who only says they believe and they'll walk away. And we've seen that happen. You know people who've been shaken and walked away, who faced hardships and have gone. Some even say that COVID was a great shaking of the church. We've seen it. But if you shake someone who is strong in their faith and believe, it only makes them want to hold on all the more. I just rode a few roller coasters. I was shaken, and I held on. Because I wanted to enjoy the ride and make it to the end. Even the one that flipped me over upside down for a long period of time. The boys will tell you about that. I won't do that. I'll let them do that. It was called Velocicoaster. I'll let them talk about it. But I held on. I could have put my arms up, but at my age, I held on. Because I still like to ride, but with age comes a little wisdom. So when Satan tries to shake us, to make life hard on us, we will either throw in the towel and walk away, or we'll hold on and make it through. He tries to make life hard on us, but I want you to know that he doesn't win. We have the ability to overcome any hardship, any persecution that's coming our way. Now, this is kind of hard for us because we don't really face too much persecution right now. We see it in other places. We see it in other countries around our world. And believe it or not, it's coming. Just look at what's happening in Canada right now. And if you don't know, look it up. Churches in Canada are being persecuted today. Today. And that's just our neighbors to the north. If you think that persecution isn't going to come our way, think again. And you got to be ready for whatever it is and however it comes. But even though it's going to come, Jesus tells us that one day these people will bow. Now, we're going to get to see that event soon as we make our way through the book of Revelation. But yes, one day every knee will bow and every tongue will confess that Jesus is Lord. And yes, those who believe will be proven right at that moment. And for those who didn't, that have to confess before that great white throne, it's going to be too late for them. But this church did. They held on. And Jesus says, because you obeyed my command to persevere. Now, there are three words that jump right off the page for me in this statement. So let's take a moment to look at each of them. The first is obedience. The church obeyed what God said. It didn't matter what the world said. It didn't matter what was going on. It didn't matter what they were facing or what was being said about them. It was more important for them to obey what God said. And that's why there's that second word that we have, command. They knew that God had spoken what they were to do, gave them how they were to live. They understood that they weren't reading the 10 suggestions, but the 10 commandments. So they understood that if they wanted to really obey, they had to do what God said. Not just kind of do what he said, or sort of do what he said, but actually do what he said. And that brings about our third word, persevere. Webster's defines persevere as to continue doing something or trying to do something, even though it is difficult. And that is exactly what this church was doing. They were being obedient to what God said in the midst of great difficulty. They endured opposition, which might have stopped us right then and there. They were patient in their suffering because they were looking for something better. It didn't matter what they were facing or what was happening to them, because they knew that there was something better that they were living for. And they kept going no matter what they faced. And these are all the things that we have to make sure that we do when we live this life. Because we will face opposition at work, in our family, in our neighborhoods. We have to be patient when hard things and hard times come our way. And we have to have the strength and the courage to keep going, even when we have little strength. And we have to hold on to what Jesus tells them next. He says, I will protect you from the great time of testing. And I think we have to understand this morning that the Greek phrase used here has two meanings. When it says, I will protect you, it means this. It will either mean I will keep you from experiencing something, or I will keep you through as you experience something. And let's admit, that's two pretty different definitions. Keep you from something means that when you come to the trouble, you get to go around the trouble. If there's a traffic jam, you get routed around the traffic jam. Or you go through it, which means there's the trouble, and you still have to go through it. But Jesus will keep you through it. There's a big difference. So this morning, when Jesus tells us that he's going to protect us, which one is it? Will he keep us from, or will he keep you through? Well, this morning I have a real theological answer for you. Are you ready for this? You can write this down. Both. Both meanings are correct meanings for the church there and for us today. We will be kept from experiencing God's judgment on this world. Again, after Christmas, we're going to see the next set of judgments that come. In chapter 4, we are going to find the scene in heaven, and we're going to see seals broken and God beginning to pour out his wrath on the earth. But I want you to know that we're kept from it. And I'll explain all of that as we go through, but I want you to see that that's not for us. We're going to be there in heaven with Jesus, and he's going to keep his church from all of that wrath. But you also have to understand that Jesus will keep us safe in him until then. He will keep us through everything that we have to go through until then. We can walk through the valley of the shadow and know that he's with us. But not just with us, strengthening us, helping us, there for us in ways that we've never dreamed. Even when we have little strength, like this church, we can know that he's there for us and will help us face whatever it is that we have to go through. Because let's face it, all of us will face things that we would not want to have to face. Sometimes Jesus does keep us from facing some things. And sometimes, in his will and plan, we go through them. I don't know why. I don't know what good comes from it. But in his plan for us, he's there. Now, in coming wrath and judgment, we're kept from it. Until then, he keeps us through it. And he's there. Why? Well, I want you to see that he wants us to expect what's happening next. Look at Revelation chapter 3 and verse 11. I am coming soon. Hold on to what you have so that no one will take away your crown. And this is what we have to realize today, that Jesus is coming soon. That's what this church was holding on to. That's what he wanted this church to know, that no matter what they were facing or what they were going through, that something better was coming their way. And that not only did they have to be ready, but we have to be ready. No matter what we're facing, we have to have this at the forefront of our mind and thoughts. We have to hold on because it's just right around the corner. If Jesus was telling this church that he was coming soon, and 2,000 years later, it's soon. He's at the door. It's almost here. And he wants us to be ready. And I don't know about anybody else, but this is what we are to be living for. Not a house, a car, good paying job. We're to be living for that crown from Jesus, that reward for him coming back to take us to be with him forever. Never lose that as your focus. And remember, the other thing that Jesus mentioned is still there, that open door. Not only do we have to be ready, but we have to make sure that other people are ready. Just like this church did, we do. Part of us being ready is making sure the people that we love and care for are ready. And they were being told this so that they could be strong together. Please understand, there is no island of a Christian. Just you, that's it. No one else. You're not a Lone Ranger Christian who rides into town, saves it, and rides away, and you're just you by yourself. We all need someone. We need each other. Because all of us struggle. All of us go through hard times. Sometimes we might be weaker than someone else, and we come alongside and say, "You can make it. Let me help you." We need each other. And Jesus wants us to be ready. And not just us to be ready, but we have to be there for each other. But again, that begs a question, right? Are we helping someone else pass the test? Are we helping someone else get ready for his return? Are we making sure that the people we love and care for are ready to go when that time happens? Because we know it's coming soon. Turn on the TV, pay attention. He is coming soon. If one of the deadliest tornadoes that have happened since we've recorded them doesn't tell you something, he's coming soon. He wants us to be ready. Are we making sure that others are ready? And then remember what he says next in verse 12. All who are victorious will become pillars in the temple of my God, and they will never have to leave it. And I will write on them the name of my God, and they will be citizens of the city of my God, the new Jerusalem that comes down from heaven from my God. And I will also write on them my new name. Anyone with ears to hear must listen to the Spirit and understand what he's saying to the churches. Now this sounds a little funny to us, right? All who are victorious, we become pillars in the temple of my God. And let's admit it. At first, this sounds kind of not good. Great, I made it to heaven, and now I got to stand here and hold up the ceiling. Yay. Hope it's not heavy. Right? Because for us, this doesn't make sense. But they understood it. Remember this city's problems. Had a really big problem, actually. Earthquakes kept knocking everything down. Everything in their city kept being destroyed. It wouldn't stand up. It's why most people lived outside of the city, so nothing inside of that city would fall on them. But while everything around them was constantly being knocked down, a pillar is something that held up. And I want you to know that Jesus was telling them that nothing could shake it or make it fall. They knew all about things shaking and falling. And Jesus was telling them that if you make it, if you hold on, if you believe, you are never going to be shaken. You're never going to fall. This is permanent. They might have had to endure a lot of things, but nothing was going to stop them from living with God forever. And once they get there, they will never have to leave it. That's what he was telling them. They were going to be a permanent fixture there. And then he tells them that I will write on them the name of my God, and they will be citizens of the new Jerusalem. And yes, I do have to go here. Did anyone's parents ever write your name on things when you went to school? Backpacks, lunch boxes, coats, gym clothes. My mom did all of that. Gym clothes, she didn't just write it on the tag. She wrote it on the tag. But she did that so that nobody could take my stuff. If somebody had a similar lunchbox, because back when I was in school, that was the thing to have, right? No brown paper bags. You had to have a lunchbox and the thermos that went with the lunchbox. And my mom wrote my name on the lunchbox and the thermos, so nobody could take my lunchbox and thermos. They would know, oh, if they opened up and turned it over, there was my name. Not in my handwriting, it was in my mom's. She claimed it. And I want you to understand that this has a very simple and easy to understand definition. We are claimed as his. It's that simple. It's that easy. He writes his name on our hearts. We're his. We belong to him. We are now part of his special collection that he wants to make sure that nothing happens to. Some of you have special things in your house that nothing can happen to. They're kept in a special place so that they're safe. And that's what he does for us. He writes his name on our hearts. And he keeps us through everything that we go through so that when we get there with him, we are his forever. As a matter of fact, when he writes his name on us, it actually changes our status. We become citizens of the New Jerusalem. Now, citizens are people who belong to and live in a place. They're permanent residents. They're not people who just travel somewhere on vacation and see something and leave. They belong there. And they live there. And that's what Jesus is saying for us. When we hold on and when we believe, we will live there forever. Now, we will learn more about this amazing place in Revelation chapter 21. But to have an understanding right now, it's a place where God will live with his people forever. He's not going to be somewhere else and we're going to be somewhere else. Because it's hard for us to understand that now because we're here and he's in heaven. But then he's going to live with us and us with him. And I admit, it's hard for us to grasp. It's hard for us to understand. But that is what he's going to do. Because we're his. And he claims us. And he loves us. And you are so special that no matter what you're facing and going through now, that he's doing everything in his power to lead you to that right spot so that you can hold on and not give up, so that you can face whatever it is you're facing, so that you can overcome whatever it is you're going through and know that he has you. He's wrote his name on you. You're his. But let me ask you this question. Are you ready for that day? Are you ready for him to come back? Because it could be today. Are you ready? Do you know you're going to be there with him forever? Are you helping people get to that place? Because remember, it's our responsibility to share. And we're in this together. And he's given us an open door to do it. No one can shut it. Well, Pastor, I don't know if I can share that with my friend, or I don't know if I can share that with my family member. He's given us an open door. Who can shut it? No one can. Now, they might not respond, but it's still an open door. And are we doing what we need to let people know so that they can be ready? Are you living a life that doesn't deny God? Understand that life being hard is not an excuse. COVID being out there is not an excuse. Yes, it's out there. I understand. My dad was in the hospital. I get it. Got it. Understand. But that's not an excuse for us to give up on God. It's not an excuse for us to say that we can't worship him. It's not. What doors has God opened for you to share his love? And are you walking through them? I mean, let's face it. We go through doors, and sometimes those doors are open, and we can go, oh, that's a nice door. But not everybody goes through the door. In our culture and society today, there are a lot of people who knows what this door looks like. They label themselves as Christians, but they have never gone through the door. They label themselves as people who believe in God, but they haven't been through the door. So what are we doing to make sure that they made their way through and they come to know Jesus as their Lord and Savior? What doors has he closed to keep us safe? Because he does that too. I mean, not only does he keep us safe from things, but we've got to go through things, but sometimes he closes doors. Are we trying to open those doors? Don't do it. If he's closed them for us, it's for a reason. Understand it. And then finally, are you ready for his return? This morning, that church was enduring. They were living. They were being. No matter what was happening in their world, they were faithful. And God told them, to hold on. You can make it. I'm writing my name on you. You're mine. I have a special place that won't ever be shaken. You're going to stand there forever. And that's what he's telling us today. But we've got to be ready. We've got to make sure that we're ready for that to happen. How many parables did Jesus tell us when he was alive about this event? Five were foolish, five were not. You have to have your oil lamps full. He told us so many to be ready. And here again to this church, hold on. I'm coming. Be ready. This morning, he loves you. He cares for you so deeply that he writes his name on you. If you don't get anything else from this message, get that. I mean, because I carried on the tradition. When Joel went to school, we wrote his name on all kinds of things. Ginger did it. It's a mom thing, I understand. But it's a God thing as well. He wants to let you know that you're his. You're his. And he's got a special place for you. This morning, you might not feel like you're his. You might not feel special. You might feel like this church, little strength. But God wants you to hold on. He's given you an open door that no one can shut. No one can say you're not good enough. No one can say you haven't earned it. No one can say that because Jesus gave it to you. And you're His. And this morning, if you just need Him to wrap His arms of love around you, if you just need some extra strength, if you just need to know you're going to make it, find a place to pray. He's here to wrap His arms of love around you. He's here to let you know He's written His name on your life. And if that's you this morning, would you come? Find a place to pray. And know that He's here for you today. Would you come?